What do you want to play, Sam?
We're going to play Take Me Out to the Ball Game. We're all going to sing it, too.
Welcome in to episode 6 of Meet Me at Mutual. I'm Daniel Choptaw at C70. That's John Nagel at Cardinals Farm. John, good to talk to you here on a very busy week.
Yes, Daniel, it sure has been, and it's been a really good week. You know, with everything with the draft, the club's starting to play better. It's good to see a lot of good stuff happening.
Absolutely, it has been. I don't know that we've gotten a feel for momentum, but when you look at the broad picture, it has been a very good week. And so let's look at that week in Redbird Rewind.
He got it! Struck him out! Look at the scene on the field. McCarver, the first run. Now his infielders all over him. A new world's record of 17 strikeouts in one game.
All right, well, since we've talked last, the Cardinals basically keep winning 2 out of 3. They took 2 out of 3 from the Giants, took 2 out of 3 from the Reds, and now have taken the first 2 against Pittsburgh. You know, the Reds aside, that's a good run of teams to be playing, and they're looking more like a complete team than we've seen probably all year long.
Yeah, pitching, as we said last time, I feel like we said this last time, the pitching is starting to make the turn. You saw 8 1/3 tonight from Carlos Martinez. Maybe left him in there a little bit too long, something we don't say usually about Mike Matheny, but, you know, I think with a 5-1 lead, you know, he could have maybe, I know he wanted to get him his first complete game, but, you know, Martinez and Wainwright, they're starting to look pretty good, and it's definitely good to see.
Absolutely. And yeah, and like the announcers were saying, as I heard a little bit, there was 122 pitches, but you know, a lot of those were not very stressful pitches. And then there's something to be taken account of there. Yeah, you're probably right. They probably should have let him, taken him out after 8. But he was throwing pretty well.
Yeah.
And so I can see Matheny hoping to get like a 1-2-3 ninth and let him get that first complete game, because there's a value in that as well. Maybe not the value of your arm falling off, but
right.
There is some value there. So
and I will say, Michael Wacha looked really good. I feel like I saw the first few pitches of the game, and he just seemed like on his first 4 or 5 pitches, it seemed like he was on. And you know, I was about to tweet something out. You know, it looks like he's going to have a pretty good start, and he did, and that was good to see too.
Yeah, I didn't get a chance to watch yesterday's game until the later innings, which there were plenty of. But yeah, from what I could, just looking at the line on Michael Wacha, you know, 3 hits in 7 innings, a couple of runs, 3 walks, 5 strikeouts. That's a much better line than we've seen for him in a long while. You have to go back to the end of April since the last time he went 7. Well, beginning of May, he had an 8-inning game. But that's much, much better than what we've seen out of Michael Wacha, and that's going to be big. Now, again, I'd like to see 2 or 3 starts in a row out of Michael Wacha like that, because every once in a while he'll drop a gem, and then we kind of backtrack a little bit as well. So hopefully, this is a start of something else. Now, the person that has slipped, it would seem, is Jaime Garcia. Jaime Garcia got really beat around pretty well by the Reds, and the Reds are a team, it's a ballpark that's conducive to offense, but that's not a team that should just be, you know, blasting your starters, I don't think. And that's, you know, kind of a scary trend that we've seen out of Garcia lately.
Yeah, he's allowed multiple earned runs in those last 5 outings, and he, you know, he's made it into the 7th one time in those last 5. And a couple times he hasn't made it through 5, so you're right. He's on the wrong end of that pitching success. If we can get him and, you know, some more consistency out of Wacha, I think we'll be, you know, headed more on the right track.
Yeah, over his last four starts, it looks like, you know, Garcia's put a whole run on his ERA. You know, it's kind of been to that point where that option year that Garcia has next year, you know, kind of fluctuated. Last year, it was no way they'd pick it up. Well, they'll start thinking about it, and by the end of the year, it's a no-doubter. We kind of went into this year assuming that they're probably going to pick up that option for next year because it's a reasonable price. But then you get some of these games and you start, you know, maybe questioning a little bit. This is a rotation that's full. Still seems to be that with the price of pitching, he'd have to really fall apart or be hurt for them not to pick that up, though.
Yeah, I think with at $12 million, if he can stay healthy and, you know, have a pretty – there'd be a pretty long period of health for him, I think you're right. I think they're going to pick that up for sure.
Yeah. And then, like I say, Adam Wainwright has pitched much better, and Adam Wainwright is winning games with his bat as well. I can't imagine what the clubhouse was like this today when Adam Wainwright came strolling in, probably proclaiming himself the next Babe Ruth. But again, it's kind of nice to see, and it was one of those situations that when you're watching the game last night and you saw them walk Diaz to get to Wainwright, it felt like this was a situation that was going to play into the Cardinals' advantage, and it surely did.
Yeah, they, you know, it seems like he's been handling the bat extremely well, which is, you know, something that we really haven't seen that much of. And he's got 6 or 7 extra base hits this season. He's on a roll.
Yeah, yeah, and, I think if I'm right, I'd
4 doubles. I see that.
Yeah. I'm thinking he doesn't even have a single this year. I think I heard something like that. That all of his hits, because he's got, you know, a home run, a triple, and then yeah, 4 doubles. And he's hitting, I think, 286 or something like that now after this double. So, you know, we came into the season expecting Mike Leake to be this guy that's going to be the pitching staff leader. And, you know, Wainwright has stepped up his game. I don't know. Maybe he was able to swing the bat more than he could pitch last year. You know, he could do something like that. I don't know. Whatever it was, he needs to keep up and doing it. But he's also, like I said, and more importantly, put up some really good starts as of late. You know, he ran into the Reds and they scored 2 on him. Again, and it looked like in the first inning, and it kind of looked like, oh, here we go again. But that was all we saw, you know, and he went 6, could have gone longer. That's the kind of gains that we need to see out of Wainwright. I would like to not get in the big hole, the early hole, but, you know, if he's going to give up just 2 runs over his time out there, I think the Cardinals take that any time.
Yeah, and we said a few weeks ago, I said the key with Wainwright is his strikeouts. If he can get his strikeouts, then he's going to succeed. And, you know, his last couple outings, you know, last time out, 9 strikeouts, and then 6, 5, you know, 5 a start before that. So, you know, that's a good sign too. And he's working deeper in games too as well. So, yeah, definitely good things.
Yeah, I mean, since the beginning of May, if I can do this real quick, he's got 41 strikeouts to 8 walks, which is, you know, like I said, it's almost a little short of a strikeout in any. He's pitched 15 innings in that time period. But just the fact that, you know, early in the year, he was, even when he wouldn't get very many strikeouts, and then he would also walk a lot of guys. He's really cut back on that. I mean, he's not Clayton Kershaw or anything, but, you know, 8 walks in 50 innings is pretty good. And that seems to be the best thing is limiting the base runners. When the hits come, there's nobody on base.
He's definitely, it's nice to see that, you know, maybe he needed a little more time from Tommy John, or I'm sorry, from the Achilles. Mm-hmm. And it's good to see that he's starting to find his form.
Yep. Seen some big hits this week. Brandon Moss has at least 3 home runs over the past 7 days. It may be more. It seems like he's there almost every night. He and Matt Adams, from the fact that at the beginning of the season, we thought first base is this wasteland, even no matter who's out there. You know, we haven't seen Matt Holliday play first base in a long time because both of these guys are producing in their own ways.
Yeah, it's good to see. And, you know, Moss has what? How many home runs? 13 home runs?
14. 14. With that one yesterday.
And he's, you know, I'm not going to say a part-time player, but he's not starting every day. Mm-hmm. And, you know, beginning of the season, you know, I was big on Brandon Moss, you know, comeback, strong comeback, and he's definitely living up to it. And it's nice to see where, you know, first base was, you know, somewhat of a question mark going into the season. It's nice to see those two guys playing well.
Absolutely. And, you know, as much as the Cardinals could still use them, It's definitely gotten to the point where if Mo decides to trade them, he should be selling high on either Adams or Moss, and it probably would be Moss if you're going to try to trade off to a contending team, somebody that needs some power off the bench, somebody can play more often. But as the Cardinals are playing better, as they do better, the Cardinals do better, and so the trade possibilities seem to decrease because of they're not going to want to get rid of either one of those guys.
Right, and it's interesting. We've talked about Adams being the better trade piece, but as you just mentioned, I think it could go either way now. The way that Brandon Moss is playing, he's got, you know, the position flexibility. He can play in the outfield too. But you're right. We don't need to be in a hurry to get rid of him.
No. I mean, the power of the bench has been significant, and you know, we talk about how the Cardinals have had such success 7th, 8th, 9th inning this year, and part of that is they start getting into bullpens, and this is a team and a bench that can handle maybe a lot of those relievers better than some starters. But the other part of it is that unlike years past, you can pull a Moss, you can pull an Adams, you might have, you know, a Piscotty on the bench because he's not starting or something like that. Even as much as he struggled, even having Randall Grichuk be able to come off the bench if he does to be a pinch hitter, you know, you can get some runs real quick and change a game with this bench that they had. And we thought that going into the year, and it's proven to be the case.
That's another area that was kind of, you know, a little bit up in the air. I think, you know, we saw the position flexibility, but the bench and first base have been keys, I think, so far.
Absolutely. Okay, so we knew a lot of good stuff on the field. Like I said, the one loss to the Reds, I think, is the only one that they've had since we recorded, because I think the last time we recorded on a Friday when they lost to the Giants. Off the field, some interesting things as well. This week, as we talked about last week, Johnny Peralta was coming back, and we had both assumed that Greg Garcia, as well as he was playing, would be the man out that would have to go down to Memphis, and then trying to figure out what that meant for the playing time at the big leagues. Cardinals, though, went a different direction. They do send Colton Wong down, even though he has that contract. They decide to send him down, I think, in part for regular playing time, trying to get his groove going. Now, obviously, the first game down there, he hit two home runs, including a walk-off grand slam, and maybe something there is happening. But it was a little surprising to me. Understandable. I understand why they did it, but it's still very surprising that they went that direction.
I agree, Daniel. And you know, we kind of said that, you know, we didn't think there'd be much benefit really to sending him down. And, you know, I still agree with that. He's gonna succeed, and he's gonna hit really well. And, you know, maybe that'll give him some more confidence. You know, he's doing what we thought he would. We thought he would hit and have some good, you know, at bats. And, you know, it sounds like he's taking it in stride and he knows why he's there. And so, you know, that's a good thing. I suppose it is better than him sitting on the bench for the majority of the time. And, you know, Greg Garcia has earned the playing time or has earned the major league spot. So, you know, it's something that I think all parties, it's best for everybody.
Now, as of right now, and I'm not sure if this is updated through today or if this counts today or whatever, but for first three games, Colton's down there 6-for-12, the two home runs, 6 RBIs, has struck out 3 times in those 12 at bats. But, you know, again, when your OPS is 1.6, I think you're doing okay. Again, small sample size. What worries me a little bit about seeing this is it makes you start to wonder, and hopefully this is more confidence and we'll see more of it in the big league level, but does Colton Wong then start to get labeled as a quad A player? If he can succeed in Memphis but has struggles in St. Louis, you know, this isn't going to help that.
Yeah, I don't think he's quite there yet. He's had some success at the major league level, and I don't think he's quite there yet. If he comes back up and gets some more extended playing time and struggles, you know, that may be something to think about then. But I think, you know, a lot of players go through this where they, you know, have to go back down. Even good players have done it before just to kind of get things fixed and, you know, kind of reset. So maybe that's where we're at with him.
Hopefully so. Again, yeah, I don't want to say that. I just think that that's something that's going to be considered. Like you said, if he comes up and struggles again, you start to think that. But you're right. He's still young, what, 24, 25? And he does have a lot of chances to get right and to come up and prove that he can playing the big leagues. Now, so that meant Johnny Peralta was playing third base and Matt Carpenter was playing second base on a regular basis. And so far, results seem to be pretty positive. I was a little concerned that Johnny Peralta would come off the DL and still need some timing, need some work on that thumb. We saw what happened with Yadier Molina as he tried it last year. But Peralta has come back and been just like the Peralta of old, it seems like.
Yeah, it's good to see. You know, he came out and had a couple doubles, I think, in his first game and then hit a home run maybe in the second or third game. It seems like, you know, he's ready to go and I think it just makes the club so much better. Probably, you know, another reason why they seem to be hitting their stride a little bit.
And it doesn't seem to be, and again, I haven't watched him play all that much just because I haven't seen the games as much over the last weekend, but it doesn't seem to be that it's hurting the team defensively. Granted, there's a lot, it would take a lot to hurt this team defensively how they play, but it doesn't, you know, he hasn't had any problems playing third base, even though he hasn't played there in a few years.
No, and I think he got tested pretty quickly in the first game, maybe. I think with a bunt, So it was like a bunt hit or a bunt, and he handled the play pretty well. And, you know, that's one of those things that you put somebody in a new position, that's going to happen. You know, it always seems to happen that way, and he handled it. So, you know, I think he's played third before. I think he'll be fine.
Yeah, the ball will find you. There's no doubt about it. So, I don't know. I'm interested to see if this is a gelling of this team and we're going to see it take off. You know, we know that there's a very rough schedule coming up for this squad, but you know, so far early results are very positive and you know, I don't think any of us are looking at the division right now. We talked about that, I think, last week, where we just kind of have to write that off at least for right now and focus on the wild card. But, you know, right now the Cardinals are in that wild card game and maybe they can start to chip away a little bit in a little bit less stressful way than if they were the favorites looking to really run neck and neck with the Cubs.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the Giants series and then so far this Pirates series is kind of, you know, I would think, you know, I don't know, maybe not. I'm not a professional major league player, but you would think it would it's going to help them when they get into this long stretch, you know, give them a little confidence. Like, yeah, you know, we do belong up there and, you know, help them through it.
Hopefully so. Cardinals right now are only a half game behind the Mets for the first wild card spot. And again, it's really ridiculous to look at this kind of stuff in June. But I think with the division the way it is, that wild card race is going to be tight, and I think we're going to keep an eye on it all year long because you can't afford to slip too far out of that. Because, you know, some teams could fall a little bit out of the wild card, still be close to the division. That doesn't seem to be the case this year in the Central.
Yeah, it's, you know, I heard somebody say on the radio, a couple of days ago that it's like, you know, 100-game, you know, playoff for the wild card. and, you know, we're not going to write them off yet, but the Cubs they're rolling pretty good. So, you know, we'll see. You know, they could stumble and the Cardinals could turn it up, but, you know, just continue this momentum and they'll pick it up.
Yep. Hopefully so. Again, it's much more fun to talk about a week where they only lose once than those weeks where they're playing 500 ball and hopefully we'll have a whole lot more of those going forward. Now, obviously that wasn't the biggest news maybe of the week. The week is, had a lot of, future talk and we're going to talk about the draft up the middle.
Alessandro to second for one, the double play! What a double play by Ozzie Smith! Oh, mercy!
Alright, Cardinals get to draft. Thursday, Friday, Saturday, this is the draft with us not recording last night. Recording here on Saturday, the draft is finalized. Obviously, the Cardinals' first pick was a very, I don't know if controversial was one, but it started
up
some
that.
People.
I would
yeah,
say
I guess
that.
That's, I guess that's fair to say. Your opinions on the first round pick?
You know, I feel like it's such a non-Cardinals pick to make in more ways than one. And, you know, even if you throw out the PED issue, it's still a pretty risky pick. Delvin Perez is a extremely high upside, but extremely high risk player. You know, someone that the Cardinals wouldn't normally take, it seems like in the past, you know, seems like their strength would be college pitchers as it's been in the past. And, mm-hmm. and so I really like it. They're taking a risk. And they're going for it. And, you know, some of the later picks are a little safer, which, you know, is good backup. I like it though. I like the risk and, you know, we can get into the PED stuff and talk about that. But I think this is a shift in the organization and I like what the things I hear coming out of the front office.
Yeah. And we're going to talk about the PED portion of that here in just a second, but I agree with you. I think that it obviously helped the fact that, they have 3 picks in the first round, 4 picks on the first day. It seems like the last time they had a number of picks like that, they were a little bit more, I don't want to say reckless, but a little bit more risky with their selections. And I can't remember when that was. It seems like it's a few years back. I'm not sure who it was that they took. But it feels like maybe they had done similar in the past. But, you know, having the option of picking 2 more times in just a few rounds. But this is an interesting, I look at these people and when they separate what he, you know, the PED part from what he could be, and they talk about, you know, Correa and they talk about Lindor and a guy in that mold and maybe not quite as good as those guys. Like you said, high risk 17-year-old, but having a chance to have a talent like that, something the Cardinals don't really get a chance to do. I mean, when they're drafting always in the latter third of the first round, those talents don't fly down to you. They're gone well before you get to pick. So to have a chance to take what could be a transcendent talent, is fun to see anyway. And again, why he got to you, that's a different story, but I think they'd almost been, they would have had to have taken him no matter the issues, just because these things don't roll around very often.
Right. It's a great value pick, if anything. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, he was supposed to, Delvin Perez was supposed to be a, you know, top 5 pick, you know, some thought before the news of the PED test. And you're right. I mean, and John Mozeliak said it best. Somebody was going to take him. Mm-hmm. Why not us? You know, and, you know, I think with the Johnny Peralta stuff, they've already crossed that bridge with the PED. So why not cross it again? You know, we've handled it once and, you know, there's a lot of talk, you know, after he was picked, you know, some people, saying, you know, maybe not the best move, sends a bad message. Mm-hmm. And Mozeliak said, if that's how they want to feel, if it's going to give us a black eye, then that's how it's going to be. And I really like to hear that from him. I like to hear that, you know what, we don't really care what you think. We think this is best for our organization. We think it's going to put us in the best position to win. So if you aren't happy with our pick, then we're sorry. You know, I really like that. And I feel like, you know, maybe that's how they have always felt, but they haven't said that. And so it's nice to hear it.
Well, and again, I mean, yeah, I mean, that's, I think, we saw that, like you said, with the Peralta signing a few years ago.
Right.
That they were not, and you know, even the, even bringing Mark McGwire back as a hitting coach, and dealing with all of that stuff. I mean, granted, he wasn't playing at the time, but you still had to relive all that stuff as he confessed to his steroid use mm-hmm. just to really kind of get a chance to play. This is an organization that's dealt with it. It is an organization that it gets held, it feels like, to a higher standard at times. I feel like if, you know, whoever picked 24th or 25th took, Perez, they probably wouldn't have gotten,
right.
The ire that some did. I think that, you know, the Post-Dispatch's newest columnist, Ortiz, and Jose de Jesus Ortiz, I believe is his name, you know, immediately came out on Twitter saying it sent a bad message to kids. You know, what are they just don't care what they're talking about the kids. Now, granted, he automatically tied it to the hacking scandal.
Yeah.
You know, Ortiz, before he came to St. Louis just a few months ago, was a Houston beat writer. I have a feeling he holds that a little bit closer to the vest than maybe some of us do. That's just the way it is. I mean, like you said, it's good to see the organization not being too concerned about their reputation, because if he comes out, if he never tests for PEDs again, and he comes out and becomes a guy like Correa, Lindor, a possible, you know, face of baseball type talent, nobody's going to care, you know, eventually. that he, you know, he had this test. I don't think, or it's always gonna dog him. He's always gonna have it. But if he never tests positive again, I think it's a lot easier to say he was a kid and now look how good he is. So hopefully that's what we'll see out of him. Cause now, you know, on the flip side, like you said, the risk is if his offensive numbers are really tied to his usage, which is, you know, if that's possible, you know, then he could fall really hard.
Yeah, I think that's the big thing here. You know, let's take out the morality problem. You know, I think the big thing is how much of his performance and how much of his, you know, his, you know, ability, I guess, shown it was or is tied to that, you know. Mm-hmm. You would hope they could kind of see past that, and that's not going to be, you know, there's going to be things you're going to see that aren't going to be related to that. But, you know, I think that's the bigger thing here is let's make sure that we have a really good player, you know, when he's not, you know, on PEDs. And, you know, the thing is, Daniel, there have been high draft picks that have been caught before. You know, maybe not so much in the examples I'm thinking of with a actual performance enhancing, but, you know, there was a Rockies prospect who, you know, was, you know, he tested positive for Adderall and, you know, I don't remember, you know, a big deal made about that. Now it's different. The drug is different, I suppose, but still it's happened before. It, you know, happens in the NFL draft too. And these players still get taken. And bottom line is he was going to go somewhere, you know, might as well have been a good value pick for the Cardinals.
And if you're wanting to, if you're worried about what that sends a message to some people, I mean, you can say, yeah, okay, sure, he's going to get his couple million dollars no matter what. But without the PEDs, you know, he would be, you know, top five pick.
Right.
I mean, he did lose something in that.
He
lost from 5 to 23, and the slots get smaller pretty quickly.
Yep.
And he lost a little bit of leverage as well. So it's not that he's getting rewarded for what he did. Because he was on, as far as I know, he was pretty much on the radar even before anything of this could have come together. It's just, he had a little bit of an offensive outburst this year, and, you know, that's what happens when you get to 16, 17 years old, too. So, a lot of us, we see this draft, and we have trouble grasping how far away these players really are, I think.
Right.
We're talking what? 5 years, maybe, for a guy like this? 6, maybe even more?
Yeah, I think, you know, if he has a, you know, if he performs well in the minor leagues, you know, I think 4 is a speedy rate. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think, you know, 5 and 6, you know, I don't think we should expect 4. I think at 5 or so, cause he's 17, you know, he won't turn 18 until November, almost December. Yeah, so, you know, I would say 22, 23, 5. 5 years or so, I think, yeah, that's about right.
Yeah, I'm just quickly trying to pull up. The only name that kind of comes to mind that the Cardinals have done this with is Oscar Tabarez. And, I mean, obviously he didn't get drafted, but the young teenage talent that developed in the organization, and he was in the minors for, I'm thinking, what, about 4 years or so. I don't pull in his major league page is coming up right now. Oh, here we go. So, I mean, and we know how Tavares went, we know, and he was probably maybe a little bit more developed there, but yeah, you're looking at, you know, 4 to 5 years, even with him. I guess he was 6 seasons in the minors counting 2014 when he played, in both leagues. So yeah, it feels like, oh wow, we really want to see this guy play, but it's still a ways off before we have to worry about him.
I think the one that I look back at, and now it's a different position, is Rick Ankiel. Mm. You know, he was drafted out of high school, and he made it to the major leagues, and this is completely, you know, an anomaly in 2 years.
Yeah.
And he was in the 97 draft. He was drafted, he was signed August 28th, 97, and his debut was August 23rd, 99. He made his debut at 20 years old in 35 days. You know, that's pretty fast. For him. So yeah, I think we're right about 4 or 5.
He does, in my feeling, and you've seen it more than I do, so you can tell me if I'm wrong, but it feels like pitchers in general move faster than the hitters do. Maybe because they've got one trick pitch, their stuff is just develops faster and it's a little easier to to get the pitching in versus the at-bats. I don't know, but it seems like, and maybe it's just because the Cardinals have drafted a lot of pitchers of late that have moved quickly, but it feels like pitchers fly through the system faster than hitters do anyway.
Yeah, I would say that for, especially for college pitchers. You know, kind of going to Carlos Correa. Now, we're not going to compare Perez to Correa. You know, they're both Puerto Ricans, and they're shortstops, but I think the comparison stopped there. And he was 3 years. You know, in the minor, from sign to debut, pretty much exactly 3 years. And that's really fast. And, you know, he's one of the future stars of the game. And so I think, you know, at 3 years, I'd say 3 or 4 years, if you're making the jump in 3 or 4 years, you're going to be something special.
Well, and also Correa, you know, he's coming up to an Astros team that was not anything.
Right.
They could afford to bring him up and let him continue to learn on the major league level, whereas the Cardinals, we hope, are not going to be in that situation in a couple of years. So, it seems 5 or so years, and it's a guy that I think is going to excite people. I mean, we haven't had a whole lot of that. I mean, we're starting to get that with Bader and maybe DeJong and people we have talked about on this podcast. But it's going to be another guy that people are going to want to keep an eye on, as he moves up the system.
And I think I think a lot of it is tied to how well he can hit. You know, it sounds like his defense is there. You know, I kind of made the comment, another shortstop the Cardinals have taken recently, Oscar Mercado, kind of like a better version of him, you know, great defender. And we just got to see how he can hit. You know, he's got some good bat speed from what I've seen. He just needs to kind of keep improving in that. So, I think his success will be tied to how he hits for sure.
Yeah, because it looked like one of the videos that I saw, he seemed to have very quick hands and things of that nature. So, it's good to see. All right. So, amazingly enough, the Cardinals did draft more players. it wasn't Dust Delvin Perez. The first round had Dylan Carson, an outfielder from, Elk Grove High School. And then Dakota Hudson, who's a pitcher for Mississippi State, and then their second round pick, Connor Jones, from a right-handed pitcher from Virginia. First round, first day, with the first round and the second round pick. General thoughts on these guys, and what are you seeing out of them?
I was pretty excited to see these names. You know, Dakota Hudson was supposed to be top 15 pick possibly, and even earlier in the season, Connor Jones was supposed to be a first rounder too. So they, out of their first four picks, they got, you know, eventually at some point, three first rounders. I think the Carlson pick, you know, he was kind of, you know, maybe you know, they might be he, that might be a place they can save some money on. To get some of these guys signed. But then again, he's a good player. Maybe, you know, we can pretty much all agree that he, you know, 30 through is probably a little too high for him. But, you know, they like him. They're able to get two other guys after him that are pretty solid. You know, I think the first and second round, I think that's pretty impressive, for what they could do. And, you know, the talent, you know, I think reading up on Connor Jones, the second rounder from Virginia, reading everything I read on him just screamed Lance Lynn to me. You know, he's got a heavy sinking fastball. You know, he's a pretty big guy, you know, kind of a late, you know, kind of his peak maybe. He's going to be one that's going to move quickly through the system. You know, he's going to be a 3 or 4 starter. It's probably going to be his peak, but he's not, he doesn't have the risk that, you know, Perez has. So I think that's those back-to-back college pitcher picks and Hudson and Jones, I think are really good to see.
Yeah, and I mean, we know that the Cardinals are a pitching-focused organization, but they could use a little stockpile. I mean, I know they've got a lot of young guys that are still trying to figure this out, but these are guys that could even probably leapfrog a little bit of those, that minor league, lowest minor league level guys, because of their college experience. Isn't that right?
Yeah, I think so. And it'll be interesting to see what they do with those guys. I'm not sure if Virginia's still playing. I know Mississippi State is. And, you know, Hudson was pitching either tonight or last night he pitched. So they're going to take it slow on him. And I wouldn't expect to see these guys too much this year. You know, typically what they've done in the past with the big names is they throw a few innings at the Gulf Coast level, you know, down there at the complex in Florida. And then they throw a few innings with the Palm Beach Cardinals on the same fields so that they can kind of keep those guys close to them. And that's probably what I would expect out of those two guys.
As you said, Dylan Carlson possibly a place where they could save money. I was reading about him. They really seem like he could be a hitter.
Yeah.
They're, it seems like they're not really sure about an overall player, but he can hit, which almost kind of seems like Matt Adams. I mean, when you just
yeah, he's say a, that. A switch hitter. He's got power from both sides of the plate. And it, you know, it sounded like, you know, he could play right field, but first base would probably be his best spot, and he could play an above average first base.
And like you say, Carson's a place where they can save. He's already said he's willing to sign with the Cardinals. He's kind of giving away some of whatever leverage he has. It's possible even with Perez, maybe they can save a little money. This could be a situation where the Cardinals really go all out, especially since next year, in theory, they're going to lose draft picks, and that if the CBA doesn't change, these draft pools are maybe smaller for them, and maybe where they just kind of splurge and run the risk of the penalties of overspending.
It's interesting looking through these top 10 rounds. You know, they after Carlson in the second pick, they took one more high schooler. And none of them, none of the colleges, maybe the 10th rounder looks like was a senior. So they, you know, it's interesting to see that they may, you know, maybe they took some, a little bit of lesser guys to save some money, but no senior signs that can save them some big money. So they must feel like that all these guys are going to sign with the club.
Yeah, Cardinals drafted two catchers mm-hmm. in the top, one in the fourth round, one in the seventh round, and then again in the 16th, you start getting later there, you're kind of starting to think about just organizational filler, I think. But, you know, two catchers in a situation where we have continually talked about that succession to Yadier Molina, it feels like they're at least thinking about it with a couple of guys. That early on.
Yeah, but I don't think either of the guys they got early on are going to be that guy. Jeremy Martinez, the fourth rounder out of USC. And everything I've read about him, you know, he's, what did I see? What did they call him? They called him an analytical player. meaning that he's going to get on base. You know, he's going to be the money ball type player, I suppose. And you know, maybe, you know, it seems like the ceiling on Jeremy Martinez is a major league backup. You know, he's not going to be your guy that's going to be starting. You know, I don't know if that, you know, says that they have confidence in Carson Kelly to be that guy, or maybe there just wasn't a catcher that they liked. You know, a lot of people were talking about, yeah, we need to get Molina's, you know, heir apparent in this draft. Mm-hmm. Well, if there's not one there you like, you're not going to do it. You know, because it's, you know, it's a couple years away. Yes, we need to start thinking about it. And there's a few guys in the system that could possibly be there, but we're not going to take someone that we don't like just to get that. So, you know, I don't think we got that player in this draft. I think we got, you know, a couple solid college hitting catchers that could work their way through the system, in the future.
And, you know, I think a lot of us, and I'll confess to probably being in that group, tend to think that we need to find Yadier Molina's replacement in the idea that whoever we're going to find to replace Yadier Molina is going to step in and play for 15 years. And that's not going to happen. And right. At a high level, we have been spoiled by Yadier Molina. You know, most people's catchers, you know, they go through them every 2, 3, 4 years. They're, you know, average at best at the, you know, so even if we throw enough, you know, even if Carson Kelly's the guy that comes in and takes over for Yadi whenever that Yadi goes on, you know, you may have another one come up through the system to replace Kelly in a couple of years, or you may, you know, so if you put enough catchers in the mix, something's going to happen. And I think that's somewhat what the Cardinals are thinking as well.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, it seems like the last couple of years they've taken these mid-round catchers. And I mean, like fifth, sixth rounds. They've taken a few of those. You know, Brian O'Keefe from a couple of years ago, Chris Chinea from LSU last year, and then Martinez, this year, and then Knitzer from North Carolina State this year too. So, you know, they're loading the system with catchers for sure. That's obvious. I don't know if it's in hopes to see if somebody, you have enough and you just need one, you know? I don't mm-hmm. know if that's what they're looking for. But they've definitely retooled the catching, position in the system.
Ask you a two-part question then. Is there anybody that we haven't talked about in the top 15 that you really like? And is there somebody in the bottom portion of this draft that is one of those guys that, you know, most likely isn't going to sign, but the Cardinals might give a real big push to try to lock him up anyway?
Okay, so fifth rounder, Walker Robbins. He's a high schooler. Mm-hmm. He's one I really like, just from reading on him. He seems like a good athlete. He's a two-way player. You know, he can pitch and he can hit. Out of Mississippi. Sounds like they'll be able to sign him. A draft writer from scout.com said that he feels like the Cardinals can sign him. He's an intriguing one for sure, as well. Eighth round pick out of Wichita State, a pitcher, Sam, I think you pronounce it Tavis. He underwent Tommy John surgery in February, March. So he missed pretty much the whole season. And he will be one that will be, you know, he won't pitch until next year, probably late next year too. And he's an intriguing one to watch because he probably, if he was healthy, would have been a lot higher of a pick. And he may be one that may be a tough sign. They did this a couple years ago with a pitcher, that they weren't able to sign. And so if they can get him as well. So those are two names to watch in the top 10. The second part of your question, and I'm not sure if there's going through, here, you know, none of the names really rung a bell. Mm-hmm. There's a guy, let's see, what round was it here? Let me see here. Where'd he go? There he is, 31st round, Jonathan Murders. Mm-hmm. Somebody on Twitter made the joke that he really murders the ball. That's a pretty corny joke, but he sounded like a guy that may be a tough sign, that maybe, you know, maybe they could throw a little bit more at to get him. You know, he's a Missouri player. A lot of college players, and you know, it seemed like after the first four, there really wasn't much intrigue. They really didn't seem to get those type of players like, hey, let's throw a whole bunch of money at and see if they can sign them. So it'll be interesting to see, how they spend their money. If there's a couple they look at, Vincent Jackson, 14th rounder is one to watch. And let's see, who is it? Tyler Lancaster, 16th round. He's a catcher too. What's interesting about him is they said he's from Spartanburg Methodist, that powerhouse, in South Carolina, but he's the same school that kept Brown. He was the Cardinals 10th rounder last year. It was kind of like a hopeful sign that, mm-hmm. that didn't happen. He enrolled there, and I guess Tyler Lancaster got a good look because all the scouts were there to see Kett Brown. So he's one to take a look at there. So just some names here, and you know, we'll kind of follow these guys and check back in on them, and you know, you'll on Twitter we'll keep up with who signs and who doesn't.
Right. And see, the signing date is now, what, is it July 15th?
Yeah, it's in July. I'm not sure of the date, yeah.
Yeah, it used to be, I know it was, you know, before they went back to school, but then they changed that around.
Yeah, yeah.
It's, you know, there's always seems to be that idea that there's somebody. I can think of a few years ago, I think they drafted a guy named Austin Wilson that was a Stanford, going to Stanford. I think he was a 10th round guy, and they, you know, tried real hard to get him to sign, and he didn't. I think he's in the Mariners organization now, maybe. There's some of these high school guys, you take them late because everybody knows they're not going to sign. And,
right.
You know, maybe you throw some money at them, but I hope it looks like, from what you're saying, that they're focusing more on the first round and that's, you know, the first few rounds. And that's a fair way to do it too, instead of, you know, if you're going to gamble, at least to gamble on some talent
right.
that I think is really there.
And you know, a lot of people always question, why do that? Why draft players you know you're not going to sign? And I always give the example of a pitcher from 2 years ago who was drafted late, and he had a scholarship waiting for him from Louisville, you know, and that, now talk about powers, that's a power. Mm-hmm. for baseball, and he was a wrestler, and something fell through with another guy that was, you know, after round 10, and so there you go, they threw money at him and he signed, and he's a high upside guy that they got in like the 30th round. So I mean, you never know what could happen. So you know, 30th round picks, they tend not to stick. Not saying they don't, but mm-hmm. but the odds are against them, so why not try and get a high ceiling guy, and you never know what happens.
Well, and I mean, if this is an organization that has proven time and again that the late rounds, mid to late rounds, can be very effective.
Yeah.
You know, Segrist, Rosenthal,
yeah.
Adams. I mean, all those guys that are in the, you know, Matt Carpenter, way, mm-hmm. you know, even around midpoint or below of the draft, and they're very productive people. So if your scouting is good and your development is good, you can find talent where other people aren't. And so it will be fun to see how you know, maybe in 5 years we're talking about, well, we're seeing all the murders headlines from, you know, Jonathan, you know, all the puns that people are making,
yeah.
You know, on Twitter as he's leading the Cardinals. Who knows?
Right.
We'll have to see. All right. Anything last about the draft you want before we shift gears?
No, I think it was a good draft, a good front of the draft. You know, the back end kind of got a little, I don't know if boring is the right way to put it, but if, you know, they can hit on a couple of those guys at the front, even the third rounder, Zach Gallen out of North Carolina pitcher, he seems like a pretty solid pick as well. So the three college pitchers there that I think have a pretty good chance of making some noise. You know, I think you've got some future major leaguers there. And with Perez, you know, very high risk, but very high reward. And that's a risk that the Cardinals, you know, they have to start taking, you know, especially with the Cubs making noise, as well. So I think it was a pretty good draft. We'll see who signs, who doesn't, and we'll follow these guys as they work their way through.
It is kind of interesting just skimming this, and I'm not comparing it to any other year, but just the feel as I skim this. It seems kind of funny that the first draft actually led by a former pitcher, the Cardinals don't draft as much pitching as they have in the past.
Yeah, as I'm looking through it too, you're right. You know, they got the big names at the front end. You know, all three of those guys were big names. Hudson, Jones, and Gallen were big names coming into the college season. And then they kind of went away with it for a while. So yeah, you're right. You know, they got who they wanted at the start and then they went offense.
Yeah. And, you know, again, we've talked about the need for that in the system, but it is kind of interesting that Randy Flores running his first draft, you'd almost think there would be a little bit of a bias toward the moundman, and that doesn't seem to be the case. Like I say, later on your draft, but I think everybody kind of drafts pitchers later on just to fill their rosters out.
Right.
That early on, there's a lot more position players that I was a little, at least what I'm used to seeing when following these drafts. All right. Well, let's shift then to the futures report.
0-1 to Pujols. In the air, left field, and Pujols has given St. Louis the lead. A dramatic, towering three-run home run. Stunned in disbelief here in Houston.
You know, it seems kind of funny to talk about the futures. We've just spent this whole time talking about the draft, which is long futures. But you've got a guy you want to talk about that's a little bit closer than these guys. Not a whole lot, but
not a whole lot. Yeah, Jack Flaherty, pitching for Palm Beach. He is starting to heat up. He pitched tonight for Palm Beach, and it extended his scoreless streak. I think it's 20 innings is what I saw. He went 7 innings tonight. And he, 7 innings, 5 hits, 1 run, no earned, struck out 10. And if you combine that with his last 2 starts, he struck out 9 on May 27th. He struck out 7 in his last start on June 3rd, and then 10 tonight. My quick math tells me that's 26, strikeouts over 20 innings. Mm-hmm. And that's a good ratio. And he struggled early on. He had a stretch where he had lost 4 out of 5 starts and, was kind of, you know, maybe there's some questions about was this a quick promotion to Palm Beach or not, but, it's nice to see that he's got a 20 inning, earned run less, I guess you would say, streak, and the strikeouts are there too. So, Jack Flaherty he's definitely in the mix for a top 5 prospect. And he had some really good success last year at Peoria, and so he's one to watch. He's only 20 years old. He'll turn 21 in October, so he's a young one who seems to have turned the corner at Palm Beach.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at looking at his box score, his second time out, he gave up 7 earned runs in a third of an inning, which ran his ERA up to 7.84 because, yeah, that's going to do it.
Right.
But ever since then, I mean, he's been pretty solid just looking at the earned runs. He's given up 4 a couple of times, 3 a couple of times, 2, and then, like you said, the scoreless streak that he's on now. striking out batters at a fairly good rate, even beyond the last three games, although this 10 that he just had tonight, his season high. He's looking like you say, he could be it now. Obviously, there's not a rush on him. He's probably, do you feel like he'll be there all year long, or is he looking like maybe a late season promotion up to double A?
No, I think they're going to keep him there. It seems like in the past couple of years with pitchers in his spot, they just let him finish out the season at his level and start him at a fresh one. You know, they may move him up, who knows, but I wouldn't count on it.
And it may depend. I mean, we have seen in the past at least, and I'm not looking at the standings or anything like that. I know at times people get bumped up if a team goes into the playoffs, like
right,
AA.
Right.
I might want that arm for the bullpen or something like that and get a little postseason experience. I don't know where Springfield is right now in the midst of that. And of course the Texas League has that split season anyway,
yep.
So it may not matter, but, anyway, definitely a guy to keep an eye on. And if I'm right, you'll correct me, he was the second pitcher taken last year in the first round?
Correct, yes. That is correct. Yeah, so he was – oh, wait. No, he was 2 years ago. He was 2 years ago.
Oh, yeah, 14.
Yeah. He was with Marco. No, right? No, Weaver. Weaver and then
okay.
Flaherty, yep.
Okay, because there was some idea, I think, at the time that Flaherty may have been – even the better of the two, even though they were taking him second. Obviously, Weaver
right.
has moved up, and I think if I'm right, he's already made he's healthy and pitching at double A now, isn't he?
Yeah, I think he started tonight, I believe, and I think it was his second start, and he's had some pretty strong success at double A too.
And that's good to see,
yep.
after the wrist injury. Flaherty is going to be a comer, and you know, again, we've talked about that. The Cardinals have talent in that lower levels that we're going to see start filtering up, and I think that's a reason why it seems like even if the Cardinals miss the playoffs a year or 2 years, they're going to be, that window is not going to close completely for a long, long time.
Right. And you know, there's another guy too, and we're going to throw in a second player in the futures report here. A teammate of Flaherty who is used to hitting bombs and now he's striking out guys, Rowan Wick. The closer for Palm Beach he's just lights out, for the Beachbirds. He's thrown 22 innings and he has 35 strikeouts. His whip is under one. And he's striking out 14 batters a game. Talking about getting a promotion, I think he's going to get a promotion pretty soon to Springfield. And, you know, if you want someone, if you're always looking for the next Jason Mott or Sam Tuivalala, you know, I think Rowan Wick's your guy there. If he can continue his success, he's going to move really fast, I think, through the system.
It is interesting. And they're going to have to move him fast a little bit just because
yeah.
he did have the late transition, to the pitching side of things. It's interesting. I don't know if you've had a chance to read Rob Raines' book, Taking Flight, that came out, I think, at the beginning of this season. But Raines talks to numerous players, lots of minor league players, and he talks to Rowan Wick as one of them. And it's interesting to hear him talk about how he was not all excited about this transition.
Right.
And in
right.
fact, when he was talking to Raines, still not really, he wasn't one of these, oh, I didn't want to do it, but now I'm glad I did. He still would, I think, rather be hitting those bombs than preventing them.
I think a lot of guys would say that. And I remember when Tuivalala made the switch, too. It was another one that he wasn't happy about it, I don't think. Mm-hmm. But I think, you know, the Cardinals said, look, man, you're not going to succeed as a hitter. You know, Tuivalala didn't make it very far. You know, Wick had a little bit more success he had success and then he kind of, once he started playing against players that were a little older, he kind of fell back a little bit. So yeah, I mean, I can see if you want to hit, hit home runs and then you go to pitching, you know, once every 3 or 4 days. I can see where that's the case. But I think if you ask Jason Mott, I think he would say the switch benefited him.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's a difference between washing out at double A and,
yeah.
Signing some major league contract money.
Right.
You
right.
can do a little bit more with those millions than you can with the, $25,000 or whatever they give you in the
right.
minors. So, I'm sure that he'll adjust, but it was interesting because you do hear those players and you do hear the cliches and you do hear, oh, I didn't want it, but I'm glad I did and all that stuff. And he just didn't seem to be that. He was still a little bit more, maybe a little bit more critical of the organization and how they handled things than you would expect. But you're right. I mean, you know, we saw what happened with Trevor Rosenthal just a few years ago when they shifted mm-hmm. him.
Yeah.
You know, he was a double A and then, you know, boom in the majors and that's it. So, you know, Wick could be a guy in a couple of years that does the same thing.
Yeah. And a reliever, you know, those hard throwing mm-hmm. relievers go really fast.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. Well, any more players you want to throw into the future?
No, I think we're good.
For tonight? All right. Well, let's go ahead. We're running just a little longer than we normally do, but that's okay. We're going to go ahead into our last segment, Swinging Away.
Tying run at second base. In the air to right center. This game is tied. Going to third is Pujols, and it's 9-9. They just won't go away.
All right, well, let's look at our Twitter questions for this week. A lot of them tied around the draft. And also a Colton Wong situation. So we're going to, you know, rehash a little bit of what we talked about, but our friend Blues Friend 1972 wanted to ask, is Harold Reynolds the dumbest analyst ever or just right now? You know, besides Harold's, I think he had some comments about Perez as well.
Right.
The line that was going around Twitter, at least as the draft started, is, and I don't remember what the player was, but, you know, this player's 20, and a lot of players at that age, they're 21.
Yeah.
And, which reminds me of the Casey Stengel quote, you know, he's 30 years old, and in 10 years, he got a great chance to be 40 or something like that, you know. So, you know, I don't think anybody is embracing Harold Reynolds as an analyst, and I say that intentionally.
Right.
But, you know, I think for people that have to sit, and I don't watch Harold Reynolds enough, so I guess I'm not maybe the person to answer this, but anybody that has to sit through listening to Al on a regular basis, I don't think anybody's going to rank Harold at the very, very top.
Right. And it seems like, you know, I was kind of watching some of the draft coverage, and I feel like he wants to sound like he knows more than he does, mm-hmm. especially talking about these draft prospects. I mean, you can't tell me that he's, you know, watching film of, you know, Delvin Perez from Puerto Rico or something. You know, I think he's, you know, either people are telling him or he's reading about it. And I think that's my thought is, you know, he tries to look maybe a little better than he actually is. But, is he the dumbest? I don't know, maybe. I don't know. He's not well liked, we'll say that for sure, across, fans of Major League Baseball teams.
Yeah, and I mean, that's interesting because MLB Network, for the most part, I think is got some fairly good people on it, and I don't watch it as much as I used to, but, you know, from what I can tell, if you exclude intentional talk, for the most part, and Chris Russo,
right.
You know, you look at the people that are on most of the shows and stuff, and everybody seems to have a fairly good head on their shoulders, and most people, they may, you know, not be their cup of tea, but for the most part, they can take them or leave them if, at worst. But yeah, Harold seems to be one that inspires a little bit more angst. But
hey, we're talking about him, and that's what they want, right? They want to talk about him.
Exactly. And like you said, Harold can't be studying these. I mean, he's studying the major leagues teams,
right,
and he's supposed to be talking about that. You know, it's you know, he's reading the teleprompter to some degree on those guys, and any time that happens and you don't have that depth of knowledge, you're going to get caught out, I think, at times. So,
yeah.
Anyway, all right, Beefcake 5. Who I believe we answered a question from last week has two questions for us this week. One of which it goes back to Colton Wong. This was as of Colton's first game in Memphis when he hit the two home runs, including the walk-off grand slam. He asked if Colton's two home runs were either luck, anger, or is AAA pitching that bad?
I saw that question, and my first response was going to be yes. And I think, I don't know, maybe not some, maybe let's go with the latter, that the AAA pitching is that bad. Luck, no, I mean, he's a quality player. I'm not going to say luck. Anger, maybe a little bit there, but he knows his situation and I don't think he was too upset about it. I'm sure he was, but he didn't show it. I think the AAA pitching is not the best.
Yeah, I mean, I don't, if you change anger to focus,
yeah.
I mean, and sometimes focus comes out of some anger or some, you know, at least irritation, of going through this. But yeah, I'm sure it sharpened his focus some. And you know, you're playing in AAA ballparks. I don't know how those home runs, you know, if they had cleared out in the major leagues as well, but we know that the AAA, you know, Pacific, the league is fairly hitter friendly. So you factor all that in and maybe that has something to do with it. And just and maybe a little bit of luck that it happened on the first day. But yeah,
right.
I think more the fact you're right. He knows what he's got to do. He knows he's got to come down there and focus. And he knows that if he doesn't play well, and I want to talk to about a guy here in a minute that's not playing well, he may have a long time before he sees St. Louis again. And I know that contract's nice, but you'd rather probably rather be flying places and have a higher per diem than riding buses,
right?
In with the Redbirds, so
right.
Ben Kelly, our Beefcake 5, also has the question too of, can we reasonably expect Yachty to start every game at catcher until the year 2050? I have written a lot this week about Yadier Molina playing every single day. We saw him take off at least some of yesterday's game until he had to come in late in for extra innings. As much as he has struggled and he seems to have been tired at times, over the last few days his offense has improved some. So maybe he's not as worn down as we think he is, but it still seems like Eric Pryor is not that bad. Not bad enough that Yachty can't take a day off here and there.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. And we saw that, last night he took the night off?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that was good to see for sure. Especially, you know, against a division rival like Pittsburgh, I don't know who initiated, if Mike told him, hey, you're taking the day off or how that went, but that was good to see.
It's a little bit frustrating, really, to think though. I mean, you've got the Reds that they've played.
And the
Reds are a team that, in theory, you can beat with an Eric Pryor back there. And especially with the day off, you'd think, okay, sure, take the day off on Monday, let him not play Tuesday, and then, you know, at least there's a gap. But then to rest him against the team that you're going to be competing with for that wild card,
mm-hmm.
kind of interesting choice to do that. But Mike Matheny makes interesting choices quite often. So, but anyway, you know, Yachty's going to slow down. I mean, we have probably, you know, I don't know. I don't know how many more years we got of Yachty. You know, 2, 3, 4 as a, you know, everyday, regular, productive catcher. Maybe not even that. I don't know. It's, as we've talked about numerous times, they've got to start looking at that transition. Even that's not going to happen next year. It's not that far down the road.
Right. No, it's not. And, you know, we talked earlier about finding the replacement. And that's something that's going to continue. So, no, you're right. He's got a couple more in him, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, and obviously there's still some productive there, but we don't want to see, you know, as we've talked about, you know, before, you don't want to see him worn out in September and October where he has been. Now, Brandon Pena is on his rehab assignment. He's been pitching, you know, playing for the last week, I think. It's likely that they're going to take the whole 20 days, but once he comes back and if he shows he can hit, it's possible Matheny will have a little bit more confidence in letting him play once a week, once every 10 days versus Eric Pryor, and maybe we'll see a little bit more rest for Molina down the stretch. Let's talk a little bit about Tommy Pham. We have talked in the past about how maybe Tommy Pham should be in the major leagues. We've talked about how, you know, Jeremy Hazelbaker has slipped off somewhat. Maybe they could do a flip, but when you look at Tommy Pham's stats now in Memphis, and I had him a minute ago and I've lost him now, but he's hitting like about 220 or so.
222, yep.
Yeah. Is this a situation where he's not able to really have that motivation because he's playing in Memphis? Or is this a situation where, you know, maybe things are just not right with Tommy Pham?
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm looking at his numbers here, and he's striking out 29% of the time, which is, you know, really high for him. And he's, you know, his walks are about right. So, yeah, maybe it's a motivation thing. I don't know. Maybe it's an injury thing. Who knows? But, you know, it's hard to argue for a change when he's, you know, he's hitting 222 and his on-base percentage and his slugging percentage are identical. That's, you know, you don't like to see that. That's not good. So, yeah, it's It's not good. It's not good. And it's hard for me to say that he should be on the major league roster when he's performing like this.
Yeah. And, you know, it's really, it's almost sad because not just Jeremy Haselbecker, because I think Haselbecker's kind of fitting into that bench role and doing okay in that spot. But you look at Randall Grichuk, who is really, really scuffling. And could he benefit from some time in Memphis? Maybe. If Tommy Pham is hitting, you know, 322, have they made that switch? Maybe.
Right.
But until, you know, until Tommy Pham can show that he deserves to, you know, be knocking on the door, you know, Grichuk is going to be there. And Pham is going to stay in Memphis until that happens.
And I think there's going to be a point soon where Harrison Bader is going to be called up to Memphis and where he could kind of surpass, Tommy Pham. On the depth chart in center field as far as, I guess, closeness to the major leagues. So he's, you know, he's looking ahead of him and then he should start looking behind him too.
Yeah, it's always felt like Tommy Pham has just been snake bit because of his injuries. He's getting to where now that he's healthy, but like you said, that group is coming behind him and he's just sandwiched in. It would almost be a situation where if he was hitting somewhat, he could be a trade possibility because he has had some success in the major leagues. And if you're talking to a team that's rebuilding, a guy like Pham could be helpful. But when he's hitting 220 in Memphis, you can't really trade him.
No, not at all. Yeah, it's a tough spot for him.
Yep, pretty much. All right. Any last thoughts? Anything you want to rail about tonight before we end this show?
I don't think so, Daniel. I think we hit a lot of good topics tonight.
Yeah, this has been like you say, a fun week. The draft is always kind of interesting to follow, and now we'll be keeping an eye out on when these guys sign and how long it takes them to sign and how much money it takes. Cardinals are going to be doing the Texas trip. Well, not the Texas trip. They go home for it, but they get to face the Texas teams after playing Pittsburgh tomorrow, I think tomorrow night on
ESPN. Yeah.
Even though the looks like an early time, then they've got an off day on Monday, two games against the Astros, an off day on Thursday. So I guess you don't have to worry about resting Yadier Molina because he's going to get plenty of rest with two off days, and then three with the Rangers. Unfortunately, Friday is adult Colton Wong Highway and print night. Colton will not be available for comment.
No.
So, but anyway, that's going to be pretty interesting, and it's a week that's going to see. I know the Astros have struggled at times this year, but you know, there's still that a little bit of rivalry there from the old NL Central days, and the Astros are still a fairly good team. We'll see Carlos Correa, as we've been talking about him, see him these 2 days, and then the Rangers are I think if they're not leading the West, they're right up there with them in the ALS. So. And then, you know, they got to go to Wrigley Field for the first time this year. So, but we'll talk again before that happens. So, for John Nagel, I'm Daniel Shoptaw. Good night.
Shooter from the belt to the plate. A swing and a miss. And that's a winner. That's a winner. A World Series winner for the Cardinals.